welcome to episode 15 of the Asia Business Investor Podcast. In today's episode, we're talking to Nicholas Chan, who is the Executive Director of A-Zone Capital, which is a Singapore venture capital fund. Nicholas started his entrepreneurship journey in 1996 in SCN Technologies, then proceeding through several successful startups, including iFoundries in 2006, primarily in the IT area. Since then, Nicholas has moved into venture capital, where he moved from the role of entrepreneur to investor in early stage companies. Nicholas Chan has kindly joined us today to share his views on entrepreneurship and venture capital in Singapore. Hello, Nicholas. Thanks for joining us on the Asia Business Investor Podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Nicholas, for having me here today.
Oh, great. Could you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Okay, just running through the top. I am Nicholas Chan from Aegon Capital Private Limited. It's formed about close to 3 years ago. We take care of investing in small, young startups, particularly in the technological sector, in the mobile sector, and sometimes in the maritime and energy sectors. Before that, I was doing some work in the consulting field, business processes, and iFoundries Private Limited. And before that, I was actually one of the co-founders of Project Sensor, a non-profit organization running in Singapore.
I noticed that you started your entrepreneur's journey in iFoundries back in, was it 1996?
Oh, that was actually SCN Technologies. That was formed in 21st May 1996. iFoundries was something I formed when I came out of the army. Actually, not when I came out of the rally, but I came out of the army in 2003. And then after a couple of years, iFoundries was formed with my fellow buddies from the army.
Could you tell us about that experience?
Well, iFoundries was formed when we noticed that there was actually a small gap in the market in Singapore where most design firms and business process firms and hosting firms, they had a certain gap. They always were trying to sell products rather than trying to understand the customer's needs. And this was something where we realized that, hey, it's something we could actually address. We actually went in, we said, hey, look, to our customers, we are more concerned about how you can make more profits, how we reduce the cost, and more importantly, use technology to leverage on your time. And that actually went on pretty well. We actually got customers like PastaMania, we got people like Subway, we had people, Subway Asia, Subway Singapore, the entire range. We had people like Toshiba. It went on for quite a good time till about like December 2006 when I decided to move on to open Aegon Capital. So it was a good run. And we even did a couple of mergers and acquisitions, about 7 acquisitions during my stay there, of which I helped mediate. So yeah. It was that was pretty much how it was, a short 2-year journey before I moved on.
Wow. So how did you make this change from being an entrepreneur to a venture capitalist?
It was actually quite an accidental thing. I would say that it was like I was the co-founder of Project Sensor. It was a non-profit organization. And the thing is that we have been doing our part in helping and to mentor and guide entrepreneurs over the years. And the government noticed that and they realized that, hey, look, we could actually do a lot more than just mentoring, guiding, advising, and say that we'd like to just like give some money. I said, okay, well, that would be pretty good, but we didn't want to mix the non-profit and the for-profit works, split off, and Aegon Capital was formed. Aegon Capital was running something like a social enterprise to say, hey, look, we're going to invest in startups, but any earnings we make will majority go back to the non-profit organization. And that was how I was formed. So, yeah, I landed my dream job because pretty much I always enjoyed helping entrepreneurs form, get them through their formative stages and let them go their way and we just become friends. But now it's a little bit more involved. We actually get involved in a little bit of operations. And it's like every day is a new journey. And that's pretty much something which I feel that, yeah, I landed my dream job, actually. It's more like, instead of saying that, hey, I was always an entrepreneur. VC, I think it's like I was an entrepreneur that has found what he always wanted to do, except he used to do it in a non-profit form. And now I'm getting to it for my livelihood. I think it's not a bad thing at all.
That's great. So What type of work does that involve for you? Just to give the listeners an idea.
Okay. A typical day, like, let's say that it's a deal flow day where we're just going to sit down and say, hey, look, let's look at the deals that came in. We may have, like, say, per day, about 3 to 5 proposals coming in from Asia, maybe Malaysia, Vietnam, Singapore. We'll vet through them. We have a quick meeting with our directors that work in the office. We have some quick notes sent out to our investors in maybe Brunei and Thailand. Mm-hmm. And that's the start of the day, probably at 9 to 10 o'clock right now. Then perhaps later on from about 10 to about 4, we'll be having meetings with startups, either existing startups, which will have certain set days, which will see them to like catch up, or maybe we have something to actually speak to them on, or we have to then help them to do a pitch or a deal. Or we'll be seeing new guys and saying, hi, you know, asking them questions and seeing, are their projects worth investing in? And that could take up probably the entire afternoon. And then probably followed by the evening time from 4 to 8 onwards, we will typically have meetings with the government, which we actually manage some funds for the MDA. We manage some funds for people in Malaysia in Cradle Fund. So it could be anywhere in the world. It could be right now in the Philippines doing the same exact 4 to 8 meeting. And we are giving our latest updates, feedbacking, reports. And perhaps maybe from 8 to 10, we should be actually doing our final closure of the day meeting with our directors and checking on what's next for the next 2 days. So that's a typical day on our end. And yeah, like right now, we're actually preparing for our auditors to come in about the next 2 days' time. So this is the kind of things. It's no same day, really, but this is a pattern we face.
Right. It sounds like a full day.
Yeah, something like a full day, yes. Indeed it is. Every day, 7 days a week. Yep.
Now, I just wanted to talk briefly about entrepreneurship in Singapore.
Okay.
Do you think that attitudes towards entrepreneurship in Singapore are changing?
Well, I would say that I've been observing in the past couple of years, at least the past 2 to 3 years, that there are groups of people that are trying to redefine entrepreneurship to fit their mold and idea of what entrepreneurship is about. That can be good and bad. The good thing is that they're giving a lot of attention and a lot of spotlight towards the word entrepreneurship. The bad thing is that I feel that perhaps they are, in a sense, misguided, because it's always something more like, hey, I'll come and join my entrepreneurship course in 2008, and these are run by people who have probably never run a business in their life apart from just doing training. You're seeing people run events and saying, these kind of big rah-rah events where we gather together and we try and talk about entrepreneurship. But the thing is that it's all really much all about hype. And I'll say that in the past 3 years, we get more noise, more activities, but lesser successes, at least the way I'm looking at it. It used to be like in the old days, we used to have like BNI sessions, we used to go and have Rotary sessions. We find really good, solid entrepreneurs that are like have been in business for 3, 5, 10 years. Like in the past 3 years, I've been seeing many, many more startups coming up, but many of them die off much faster too, because all of them just came up for the, just for the sake of coming up, because these events probably like excited them to start up, but they failed to realize they lack the fundamentals to really think about why they should even exist and how can they even survive. So this is what I've been seeing. It's like it's a good and a bad thing. I wouldn't say it's a bad thing, but perhaps some improvements could be done to perhaps spread the message without giving false hope.
Yeah. So what would you like to see from entrepreneurs in general?
Well, if you're talking about people who maybe we look at investing in, we like to look at people and entrepreneurs with sincerity. I think that is something that is that's lacking these days. It's always about people keep thinking entrepreneurship is about, how I can sell you more and how can I like try to like squeeze out every dollar from you, particularly something that I see in Malaysia where they just say, hey, look, if you're an investor, I'm going to squeeze the hell out of you. And you are supposed to like serve me. There's something that has been a little, it's been a growing number, but yeah, we like people who are sincere and obviously have done their homework. I mean, obviously an entrepreneur should know what he's doing, like yourself. You know what you're doing. You're running the Asian Business Investor. You're not saying, hey, I'm doing the Asian Business Investor and I'm also running a meat shop and guess what, I'm also doing some tuition along the sideline, you know. You want to be having, see the focus in what they're doing and that they know that, hey, I want to spend the next 5 years of my life as an entrepreneur in this career, in this particular business. So yes, focus is next. And then third thing of all, I think, is to go and have an entrepreneur who is able to be a team player. Too many times in Malaysia and in Singapore, and more in Malaysia and Thailand, we are seeing people that say, no, I'm the boss. I'm going to do everything myself. I'll sweep the floor myself. I'll do the IT myself. And I say, but hey, sir, you're actually a designer. I say, I don't care. And we like to see people realize that, hey, they are only human. And they know their human limitations. And they say, hey, look, I am the CTO and I'm going to stay that way. I'll look to someone to help me with the business. I have someone that right now helps me with my operations. And then they know that they are a piece of the bigger puzzle. And that's the main thing that many of the entrepreneurs I'm seeing these days don't really understand. They keep thinking that being a businessman means you have to do everything yourself, control everything yourself, and screw everyone else, which is not exactly a bad thing, because, well, an entrepreneur is someone who's always very driven and very fired up, but sometimes you can't always imagine Superman, because we are not, and we always have our kryptonite, which is the lack of time, the lack of money, the lack of expertise. And this is something I believe these 3 points are things entrepreneurs should have, even if they're not finding funding. If they want to get success, I think this is what they should have at least.
Yeah, I can see that. Good points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, could you provide the listeners with a quick overview of the venture capital industry in Singapore?
Okay. I'll say that in Singapore, the venture capital industry is slowly growing. It's actually still very much in its infancy. You won't see crazy wheeling and dealing like what you see in the US. But at least in the past 2 years, I've been seeing a lot of my fellow venture capital people. They're slowly growing up. They're slowly starting to see how is it like to raise a proper fund. And I mean, it's interesting because we don't exactly have a lot of VC funds structured in Singapore. You have a lot of VC firms that are based in Singapore for the tax breaks, and then they invest out of Singapore. But now there's a slight change. They are starting to structure funds specifically for Singapore market, and of course covering Indonesia and Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a lot of people growing up and realizing that, hey, we are not just going to target on one sector, like the Web 2.0 sector, where there's a hot craze in 2006, 2007, even 2008, where everyone's crazily going over it. Then they realize that, hey, a single focus may kill them. So the VC are becoming a little wiser and saying, hey, look, let's diversify maybe 2 to 3 focuses, and let's look towards what is Asia-specific. So it's been getting better. And I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we'll start to see more and more bigger and better firms coming in, which is happening right now. Like DFJ is, I think, coming in a bigger way. Walden is coming down in a bigger way. Many, many guys are realizing that, hey, it's time to really tell the world that Singapore is a good place to invest, particularly with the government giving a lot of support, you know, giving us the stability to say plow in $60 and 2 hours later the company's up. They give a good and strong, solid infrastructure, in my view, that gives the VC the confidence to say, hey, look, it's probably a good place to park your money. It's not the best tax haven, but it's a competitive tax regime here that I think is attractive to both VCs and also, I mean, to both the startups and ourselves.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yep.
What's the best piece of advice you could give someone looking at raising capital from a venture capital source?
I would say that before you even see the venture capital person, be clear that you have deep who, what, where, when, and why, and how analysis of your proposal. Make sure it's sweet, it's succinct. We don't really need anything more than like 10 to 20 pages. Just something clear, not tell me exactly why, you know, what you're doing, why is your team the best people for it, how are you going to get this, you know, how are you going to get the whole thing done. It's sort of being very clear. And more importantly, don't try to bullshit your way across. Don't try to go and give a false accent and say that, hey, I sound like an American, so therefore I should get more credibility. Yeah. I mean, if an Asian speak like an Asian, we don't mind. I think it's more importantly also show the team that you have and show that how that they complement, make sure that everyone plays their part in explaining the role. Like if you're doing some technological stuff in the mobile sector, say that, look, so-and-so is handling this, so-and-so is handling that, and let them speak their mind, share with the venture capital people that, hey, look, you know that you, this is exactly what you're doing. We may be lacking 1 or 2 people. We may be lacking 2 or 3 technologies, and this adds amount of money we need that we may not be actually sure we actually need that much or that little. But at least show to us that you're human and show that you did your homework. Don't come to us and say that this is what I have, and I can't tell you the idea till I sign an NDA. A VC's role-wise, right, has always been based on trust. So if you're going to try and force down an NDA down the person's throat-wise, it's just akin to saying that, hey, look, I just knew you, but I don't trust you at all. So yeah. Sign this NDA, if not, I won't speak to you. I think that most people don't seem to realize that an idea is worthless. It's absolutely and completely worthless, because the only reason idea succeeds is because of the fact that the team behind it has the unique expertise to make it in a way that no other team can ever do bigger, better, and faster. And that's what they actually have to realize, that as long as they can understand that they can be sincere, they can be thorough, and you know, and they can just show you that, hey, look, we are the people for this idea and no one else can do it better than us, I think that's all that really matters. And this is all that they need to prepare to before they come to a VC. That's really it.
Great. Mm-hmm. Finally, so our listeners can learn more about your firm, can you provide some links to your company, your company website,
sure.
Or blog?
Sure, our company website is at azioncapital.com. That's A-Z-I-O-N-E capital.com. And our blog-wise, it's not really up anyway because it's now changing our software. But I guess you can pretty much find us on the internet in Google or in Wikipedia. We are all listed. And all our strategies, our interviews are all online. Feel free to go and research about us and drop us a call if you have anything.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Nicholas.
Thank you very much, Nicholas.
That's it for episode 15. For those listeners who are interested in learning a bit more and finding out some more details about Nicholas Chan's venture capital fund, we'll leave some more information in the podcast notes. And thanks very much for your time.